You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
In a world where James is the ruler of England, you're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Violations, and I'm Chris from a place that's definitely been violated by this episode.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from another realm. And I'm sorry we're going to be violating you, but I'm from Nebraska. We will be violating you, I got a feeling.
This episode is a complete violation.
It is. It violates everything.
Red card. Yes. All day long.
Yes. It's not quite the shark moment, but I don't know. But yes, we're going to be violating you in the worst way. So, Mr. Johnson.
What's wrong with this episode?
It's everything. Anything you can think of. But we'll get to that, James. Mr. Johnson, how are you today?
I'm fantastic.
So, we're back in school, right?
Not quite. Tuesday is the first day. I have actually been back at work for a week, but Tuesday is the first day that the kids come. So, almost back in school. By the time you listen to this, kids will be back in school.
By the time you listen to this, kids may be on their winter break.
Winter break, right.
But anyway, so how does it feel to have surpassed the Battle Bridge by a long shot so far?
Well, we always knew this was going to happen. Last time I was on, you were valiantly trying to stay abreast of where we were. But we were doing the breaststroke, and you fell into the doggy paddle.
Had a breast reduction.
Here we are.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's where you are. And so I'm happy. I'm good with that.
I think it's all right because it gives me time to get to reset and rethink about all these Deep Space Nine episodes before I inevitably join the three-man team that you'll be doing, where we re-go over Deep Space Nine, where I actually am a fan and I've seen it more than once. Because this time it's like, I didn't even remember this episode.
So, Doc, you must have already given him the contract.
No, not yet.
Oh, we haven't designed the contract yet.
I'm afraid not. We're not that far behind, by the way, Lou. I just checked.
No, but you know,
if you can get some editing done quick, we'll be fine.
No, actually, if you think about it, I want to stay behind. I even want to get the gap farther, because if you think about it, when they wrap up, if we're neck and neck, we'll be starting DS9 about the, you know, either at the same time or shortly after. And how many people are going to be interested in listening to it all over again that quick? Why not have a little bit of time between them?
Well, you're going to do the TNG movies too, right? Or have you been doing those along and along?
We just do the one movie. Yeah, we're going to go through all of them. We're doing one movie at a time. So this next one will be 5. What's that? The God one?
Oh, you're still in the TOS movies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we do after season of this, then the corresponding movie number.
But what we end up doing, so the way that it works and the way that we've slipped in the TOS movies is that we will do the 7th season of TNG. Following that will be Generations, and then I assume we'll follow that with First Contact, Insurrection, and Nemesis.
Yeah.
So we do have, you know, even a conservative assumption of like a month at the end of season 7 to do the movies.
And by the time you get through Enterprise, there will certainly be 21 movies, right?
No, but are there? Who knows? I'm not sure about all that. But that's a good point. I didn't plan ahead, Doc. Are we going to do the TNG movies
That was my quick math. I don't know if that's actually right.
No.
14, 21. Oh, it would be even more than that. 25 plus 3, 27 movies? 27 movies.
No. Luke, we do the movies, the TNG movies, as if they're a continuation from the series. So we consider them to be in the TNG universe. Don't do them while we do DS9.
Then we do DS9. Okay, good. So that even puts your guys further out.
When are you going to do the new movies? Because they're the best, right?
Yeah.
Did every Star Trek fan just like turn click this off?
Did you? So I couldn't have rolled my eyes any louder.
What we could have done, actually, what we will do, Lou, in between, because obviously we have DS9 followed by Voyager and stuff, so we've probably got around, 21 extra seasons to go after we finish TNG, if you can believe such a thing. In between those seasons, we can do an episode of the animated series. And it pretty much works out.
I love the animated series, so I'm all for this. I will be on every single animated series episode that you do. Lou quit the entire podcast. We just made Lou quit.
I've never seen the animated series other than the one Tribble episode that they happened to include as part of the TOS Blu-ray set.
So most of the animated series is 20 minutes of bleh. But there are like 3 really, really solid episodes, and the rest they're all right. So I don't see why everyone hates it as much as they hate it. If you're an adult, I think you should like the stories of them. At least they try to do the same thing that Star Trek, the original series, did, and they kind of accomplish it in less time. So it's if you're looking for a little Star Trek filler and you don't have 45 minutes, you only have 20, they're really good to just throw on and watch for 20 minutes. However, they're probably better, Lou, if you don't actually watch them, but you just listen to them, because the animation is complete crap. But besides that, they're fun.
Okay. So you don't want to wait to do the animated series after the original series? Why would we do the animated series before the original series?
I suppose that's... So you effectively consider the animated series as season 4 of the original.
And it marks our retirement in podcasting.
I look forward to it.
You look forward to retiring? You're so done with this. Barely even started.
So let me just point out that I don't know when we last spoke, Lou, but for about a month or so, I've been carrying a chest infection, and it's made me the most miserable person in the entire world. Mm. So at this precise moment, I'm not just almost done with podcasting. I'm almost done, full stop. Mm. I think it's good that there's no school at the moment with the kids staying home, and it's good that we're getting a little bit of extra rest. But yeah, I'm not that far from the edge here.
Okay.
Well, Doc, I hope to pull you back tonight and remind you why you actually love this crazy game.
Well, so this is a problem, because over the last couple of weeks, Lou, I've given TNG, which is, you know... I've often described the Star Trek series as clearly DS9's the best series, but TNG is sacred. Mm-hmm. And the last two episodes have been pretty poor, and I don't see much on the horizon that's going to change my opinion.
Not going to get any better.
You know what, though? I find that a lot of these episodes that are Drek kind of get better when you discuss them. You try to get at the heart of what the writers were doing. So the discussion becomes better than the episode. And then you have something to hang your hat on.
Okay, fine. True. I am absolutely certain, and I'm coming with notes today that suggest that this episode that we're about to discuss, there's nothing behind it. There's nothing behind it. Other than, wasn't he a nasty piece of work for some reason that no one ever explains? That's all it is.
At the end, I was like, man, this is a really great speech by Picard. Like, this is one great little monologue that he gives about the seed of violence being in all of us. But then it's like, the seed is so nihilistic. The seed of violence has no reason. His dad was a great dude. His culture's a great culture. He's just bad. So the sin of Adam carries on. I'm like, that's the most lame answer. I wish that there was some reason that pushed him into this, and they had explored that in the 45 minutes. Anyway, we're getting into the episode, and we're not even talking about the episode yet, but I fully agree with that.
All right, then. Well,
End of the episode. Let's cut this one off. Start the next
roll,
one.
Let's roll. The synopsis for tonight's episode is...
people will be violated.
It's on the chat, Chris.
Oh, this is... the synopsis for tonight's episode. Several crew members suffer violent hallucinations and comas as alien researchers visit the ship. Wonder who's doing it. This is the 12th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation, where they kind of fell into a morass. The original release date is February 3rd, 1992. Look it up, Lou. Written by Sherry Goldhartz, T. Michael, and Pamela Gray, with teleplay by Pamela Gray and Jerry Taylor, and directed by Robert Wymer. Guest stars include Rosalind Chow as Keiko O'Brien, Ben Lemon as Jev, David Sage as Tarman, Rick Fitz as Martin, Eve Brenner as Anod, Doug Wirt as Jack Crusher, Craig Benton as Crewman Davis, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer, and probably some unnamed actors as little background Next Generation people. So...
hang on, did you miss the doctor? Isn't the doctor in there? There's a new doctor, right? Did he get credited?
Uncredited actor as the doctor.
But he even had lines and...
you know what, though? I found that so the last episode that we reviewed on UP2 was the one where they're stuck on the prison asteroid. And there's a speaking part for the Romulan woman, uncredited. I look into this because every single time I find on the Memory Alpha page as we're doing episodes that there's like a whole list of uncredited actors, and they usually have their own little page on Memory Alpha. And I just think it's funny that Memory Alpha is so dedicated to this show that they have full pages for unnamed people in episodes. And I just find that hilarious. And so I always throw them in. So I can believe that this doctor who has lines is uncredited because I've seen it before. Or I've seen it after.
So what I think I'm going to suggest is the thing I like most about Memory Alpha, and I wouldn't say that they're dedicated as so much as I think they're special. But I like it when you actually end up getting the full pages dedicated to the stunt doubles.
They'll say,
look, oh, this is such a stunt double, Tasha Yar stunt double. And they'll show you kind of like a bloke dressed up as Tasha Yar being thrown through the air, and you're supposed to somehow think, good work. I mean, I mean, it's not even a professional shot from the individual.
It's just some screenshot that they caught from one of those behind-the-scenes docs.
Yeah, as a fandom, we are very special. We really are.
You're right. I'm trying to find him. I cannot find him, but I could see Bo Ching as Keiko's grandmother. Don Cleveland as Keiko Ishikawa as a child.
Just her hands?
Yeah.
Because they didn't ever show that face, right?
I didn't think they did. No, because she's looking at it through her own eyes. She wouldn't be seeing her own face.
Right.
You're right. He's nowhere to be found. Oh, an unknown doctor who I didn't think was going to say anything, but he eventually does talk. That's weird.
He says something straight away, right? Because he says to Crusher, hey, doctor, heading off soon? And at that point, you think, oh, he's going to be needed, because later on he's on the comm as well, as I think he's the guy that calls over to Picard and says, you'll never guess who woke up. He's like, has Troy woken up? Yeah.
Okay, so is that how you spell morass?
No.
How do you spell morass?
I think that's right. It might just be one R. It is just one R. An area of muddy or boggy ground, a complicated, confused situation.
Ah, well, thank you, Mr.
So season five is a complicated or confused situation of just ridiculous episodes. Some that are all right and some that are sticky and gross.
Yeah, lots of morass there. Okay, so we are tracking a stellar core fragment, which will be explained later, as it approaches Moab 4, a human colony on a deserted planet that doesn't look like
We're not doing that.
And Geordi believes that people know that we're there. So, James, you're not getting away with it, man. What is a stellar core fragment?
So I'm really confused here. That's not this episode.
Ew. Seriously?
So gross.
Shit. Oh. I did it again, didn't I?
Shoot him, Daddy. Shoot him at once.
Oh, the stellar core fragment is the next episode. Where it's going to, like, slide past the thing and make the tectonic movements that ruin the biosphere of the amazing people. The con community.
Yeah, guys. That's next one.
However, it's so similar though, Lou. I can understand why you got this. So they're in space, orbiting some planet. It shows almost the same scene with a slightly discolored planet.
Chris, you're not going to suggest for a second that these are on some type of trek through the stars, are they?
It's almost the same beginning.
Kind of.
Yep.
Star Trek. Huh?
Some kind of trek through the stars.
So, violations. We have some Yulians on board. They're a race of telepaths that help people retrieve forgotten memories. They have nothing stellar core fragments, which, by the way, you will be explaining what a stellar core fragment is very soon.
Oh, I'll Google it now to be prepared.
Good. Yes, but it's not going to be due till at least next week, perhaps 2 or 3 weeks later.
Perhaps 3 or 4 minutes after this.
Yeah, or that too. Can we think of anything that we might have misplaced? Because I'm still looking for 2 hard drives I can't find. I went and got... Hold on here, I'm going to let you see this. Oh, I can't let you see because it will disconnect my camera.
Yeah, all the fans want to see this too, Lou. Please.
Describe what you see.
I see a docking pad with lots of little ports for NES games.
No, it's for hard drives.
For hard drives.
Hard HDD. Anyway,
HDD,
so I got this
docking ports.
Docking station because I wanted to get some stuff off those hard drives, and I can't get them into the computer because they have, new cables, a new type of computer, whatever it's called, SATA. So I have an old drive. I can't find them. I cannot find them now that I got this thing. I can't find them anywhere around here. So I need these Yulians to probe my memory.
Mm-hmm.
But I want
Lou, they may not find that, and Lou, they may find you extremely sexy and attempt to commit violent acts upon you.
Mm-hmm. Can we call this...
just taking a chance.
Hold on a second. Can we maybe call this gay rape now?
I mean, so this whole episode is terrifying and awful. I don't know that we need to add to the terrifyingly awfulness of this episode.
I'm not being mean or bad or anything. I'm just thinking he goes on Riker.
I guess what I'm saying is he doesn't rape. Well, I guess he does what they consider rape, but it's not sexual with Riker.
I don't think they rape.
Well, he uses the word. The older guy uses, we haven't had to deal with this kind of, he even gulps rape. In very long time, so he gets some kind of gratification off of it. I mean, yeah, he.
But I would argue that with Riker, it's probably not sexual gratification. At least that's not what they're trying to present in this '90s episode.
No,
it's more of a violent gratification than a. So he just wants to be violent towards Riker, get him out of the way or something. I don't really understand why he does anything he does, and they don't attempt to explain why he does anything he does, which is why I don't think that Jerry Taylor. And whoever else they wrote this episode. I feel like this was a Brandon Braga episode. I don't know if he'd been brought on at this point or not, or if he just was a low level person, too low level to be listed in the credits or whatever, but this feels like something he would do because it's essentially horrorcore without much.
You can end the sentence there.
Pointless? It's pointless. Like, there's just nothing behind it. It's just kind of a little bit horrific and tense. Which is fine, I guess. But, I don't know. With season 5 of TNG, I feel like we should be digging into these deep concepts. Because they've already kind of dug into a lot of good things. And they've dealt with a lot of cool things. And so when I tune into TNG, I expect to be pushed to think about something. And this one does push me to think about some things, but it's in such a vapid way that at the end I'm more like, why? I don't really understand what I'm supposed to be thinking about here, because they don't ever point me in any direction to go. The next episode does. I don't remember the previous episode, but I remember the last one I was on with you guys. It points you in a certain direction. It says, hey, think about this idea. And then you dig in on something. This is like, hey, evil is evil. No matter how good we get, there's always going to be evil. Have a good day.
Right. Yep. But like you said, I wish they had discussed what he was getting out of it, why he was doing it.
Yeah.
He just Jack the Ripper type of thing. He just kills for no reason.
But this is why I point to Brandon Braga on this, because you could have done what they did in half the episode and then spent the last half dealing with the why, the what's motivating this guy kind of thing on the way back to their home planet. Mm-hmm. And Doc, I'm sorry I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
I do agree. I didn't think you get any real reason why he does anything he does. You also don't get any reason, you know, you have this swerve at the end, which I don't even know why they have that. I mean, maybe it's just, it's a swerve for the purpose of having a swerve. It's like, oh, it's not going to be him, it's going to be him instead. Right. And the kind of the final scene in particular with Troy, which is you are really, really lovely, aren't you? Oh, you're so lovely. Now let me try to do some things with my brain so I can say how lovely you are. It's a bit weird. It really is. And there is a bit of a discussion about, okay, is it telepathic rape or whatever, but you don't get the impression that Riker's going to get up and need, you know, serious counseling to get over the event that occurred. In fact, when Troy woke up, she didn't really even remember anything. She thought, yeah, it was a bit spaced out, a bit spooky, strange that you've been asleep for 3 days, and a feeling that you've got a bit of a forgotten nightmare. So there isn't this kind of like huge traumatic experience that the people, the survivors, have to live with. You don't get the impression that the guy doing it is somehow getting off on it, or is somehow drunk on the power that he has over these individuals. I just don't understand what the whole thing's about.
Well, I get some kind of, like, you mentioned Jack the Ripper a minute ago, but I get the serial killer sort of aspect at the end. He plays it that way, like the smirk that he gives feels like, who's Dahmer? It feels very Dahmer-esque. It feels like he was playing it like Dahmer there at the very, very end. But that's in the last 3 minutes of the episode. And the rest of the episode, he's being Dahmer as well. He's being very, like, do you know who Jeffrey Dahmer is, Doc? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry, Doc.
I was going to say no.
So Jeffrey Dahmer is an American serial killer, and he was caught with, like, bodies in his freezer and stuff. He was eating people. Like, he's kind of he's one of the people that they base Hannibal Lecter off of. Which they based him off of multiple serial killers, but Dahmer was one of them. Mm-hmm. And this guy was known as like a guy who was very personable. People loved him. They really wanted to hang out with him and like talk to him and all that. But he was obviously very antisocial and like a terrible person, and killing and murdering people and chopping them up and eating them. And so at the end, you get a little bit of that that. And all through the episode, I kind of get that feeling when you look back at it from, you know, that he's this awful person. I see him as Dahmer now. Like, he's going to be watching and, like, trying to exude niceness when really he's trying to be the worst person ever and deflate you. But again, I'm left with why. And I guess with Dahmer's story, too, you're left with why. So I guess it's somewhat realistic in that way, but that I don't think that makes it better as a story in any way.
But also, right, the whole point, the reason why people like Star Trek is that it's supposed to frame certain questions in a kind of fantastical story set in the future. And it's kind of, you know, it's done in a style in which we enjoy, and we can understand where they're coming from. And, you know, we obviously like the spaceships and the action, but it's, you know, there are deep questions that are put. Now, is the deep... Okay, and I understand that not every episode has to be that 100%, but really, if it's just a case that... you know, hey, sometimes you have bad dudes, and then just have that happen on the Enterprise. Really, what's the point, in a way? I don't think that the unique circumstance of Star Trek, which I suppose in this case means that instead of killing people, this guy could go and take over them from telepathy perspective and put them in a coma. and then people can have a bit of a wild goose chase about which chemical is causing, you know, the coma disease. I don't think that really adds anything. I don't think Star Trek kind of brings a lot to the table here.
If it feels like a time filler.
Yeah, if you want to watch that story, then you can watch it in a different setting, on a different series, and it could be kind of handled probably better. You know, the uniqueness of Trek is not being exploited in the storytelling for this episode, I fear.
Well, I feel like if this is going to be that episode, Doc, to respond to what you stated there, if this is going to be that episode where it's just like a whodunit, because that's kind of what they play it as for most of this episode. If this is going to be a whodunit, let it be a whodunit. When you drop the word rape at the very end of this episode, though, that tells me I got to perk up. There was something in this episode that was big and made a statement about rape. But nothing in this episode made a statement about rape. Except that, well, vapid evil people do it, and who knows why. You know, there's no statement of...
True.
There's no exploration of what would cause it or some deeper philosophical element about this thing, especially in this beautiful utopian society that they've built.
Actually, I think the issue about rape is kind of very valid, right? And it's, by the way, you know, to be clear, the guy didn't say, you know, the things that he did to Troy was the equivalent of being raped, because I think Troy's kind of scenes are slightly more sexualized. But at no point when you're watching this episode first time round and you see the interaction that the, you know, in the dream he has with Riker and, you know, and basically winding him up, at no point are you going, blimey, that's a tough rape scene to watch. No one's thinking that at all. Everyone's thinking, this is a weird, strange setup. I wonder what's causing it. I wonder what's happening here. But no one identifies it as rape, which means when they drop that at the end of the episode, it doesn't have any impact.
It's almost cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right. I think they should have replaced the word with assault. It wasn't assault. It just wasn't
rape. Yeah, like a mental assault. We haven't seen this type of mental assault in years. Now, I think the stuff with Troy does feel, you know, when you're watching it, it's creepy and it's gross. It makes me want to give this episode a 1, which you guys know I rarely give, because it just feels so gross and there's no payoff. And I feel like we've been kind of beaten on this episode, and I want to, at the end, at some point, talk about the things that I actually did like about this episode, because I think there are a few things that are okay about this episode. But the fact they used the word rape at the end, and the fact they made Troy's stuff so sexual, where I think that they should have just stuck with one thing. If it was assault and you wanted to use Riker and you wanted to use Crusher, because it was assault on Crusher as well. It wasn't sexual. It was very much, I'm going to dredge up this awful thing from your past and I'm going to assault you with it. And I'm going to hurt you in the worst possible way. They should have stuck with that element. So the assumption then would be that the worst possible hurt that our Beta Z friend here can feel is sex. Really? Like, I don't know that that's the case. I don't think that she's that sexualized, except that the show kind of sexualizes her with the cat suit and the full nine. I just wish that it was more in depth than that. And I wish they hadn't used the word rape. I wish they'd used the word assault. There's a lot of just creepy, gross things in this episode that could be better if you would have just thought about them for 5 minutes, I feel like.
And I think kind of maybe rephrasing this episode, which is of just as in, you know, the alien doesn't have a concept of, you know, emotion, or the alien has a very kind of strict, kind of confined concept of emotion, and he would like to live out certain things that have been done before. And you can almost feel like they've touched upon these things with Vulcans, and in particular on Enterprise Vulcans, where they push their emotional boundaries to see what it's like. You know, you could have done something there, but you never they never even stumble across that, right? They stay well away from that, and have this really happen for no reason. Let me also just, I'm going to have to, one of the very first notes that I made in this episode is, this is not a good episode. It's a very Troy-centric episode. It again leaves the people hating Troy, because you're associating Troy with this poor episode. And once again, and I think I've kind of fallen onto this echo chamber a lot, and I didn't see this before we started like rewatching TNG, Lou, but once again, they explicitly take out Troy as having anything unique about her in a couple of throwaway lines. So it's like, oh, hey, Troy, are you an empath? Oh, don't worry, I can't sense you guys. Okay, so straight away, whatever is special about Troy, whatever's unique about Troy, it's written out straight away. Mm-hmm. And again, they just effectively, they neuter Troy once again at the beginning of the episode. They have no respect for her character. They have to write it away because they're not clever enough to include it. And I fear that we see this time and time again with Troy. It's, we want to tell a story. The story won't allow there to be a telepath, so we'll just write her out. And you have half a character.
It's funny, too, because Troy could have been the linchpin of this episode and made what was going on even more powerful. You could have used her beta set ability and said, hey, since there are three of them and they have such strong, psychic or whatever you want to call it, powers, like, I can't tell which one is which, but there's awfulness here, and I don't know where it's coming from. And then you make the whodunit a situation where she's empowered, and she's the one who's seeking out this thing, and in the end, he attacks her for a reason, which is she's sniffing him out. She's the one that's figured, because in the end, it's Deus Ex Data. He comes in, well, we figured out that blah, blah, blah. You don't need that. You could have had such a better episode if you just had Troy use her abilities and be a strong feminine character instead of a freaking damsel in distress. What the heck is wrong with you? This is not a rape episode. Stop trying to make this a rape episode, is what I'm screaming.
I completely agree. And you even get to the point, right, where okay, I accept that Data's a popular character. You need him doing some stuff in the background. He can do his scenes. And, who doesn't like a guy sitting in the background cross-referencing Data? by Data, I mean not the character, but actual Data. Everyone loves that, right? But you even have the situation where Troy works this out. She has it sorted. She's about to, we've got this dodgy old bloke, or at least senior to Troy, who's been found out, and Troy should be able to take control of the situation, but instead doesn't. People come in to save her, and it's like, oh, how did you find out? So, well, Troy, in parallel to you having found this out, we also worked it out on the computer, and weren't we lucky to be here at this time? I mean, it's complete nonsense.
Well, we've completely screwed up your parlay through the episode. Can you catch us up to where we are?
Well, actually, we're still on the... I'm still looking for two hard drives. But, okay, so we go to 10...
So the teaser.
We're still at the teaser, yes. And that's fine. That's the way we bounce around.
Yeah.
The first customer is Keiko O'Brien, who now remembers Peyton with her grandmother. How
cool
sweet.
Scene. Let's talk... I want to talk about this, actually. This is really cool. I think that this is a great way to introduce this alien species. It's a fantastic way to kind of break us into what their abilities are. Keiko plays this scene great. People talk a lot of junk. I was about to say a cuss word. People talk a lot of junk about Keiko and how awful she is and how she's always used as this one particular character. I don't believe it. I don't buy it at all. Sometimes she is a nagging woman, but it's mostly for good reason. And she's nagging. I wouldn't even call it nagging. I would call it she's frustrated about something, and she wants her husband to listen to her, and he won't listen. But here we are. She's not nagging anybody. She's playing a fantastic scene. She is used in a great way. She's a side tertiary character used in a great way to exhibit what these people can do and how their whole thing works. It's succinct. It's fantastic just introduction to these people, and off the bat I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great episode. Unfortunately, I don't follow through on it, but this is a great scene.
Okay. I don't know if I've met I think I mentioned this before. Actually, I like TNG Keiko. I don't like DS9 Keiko. She becomes too whiny and argumentative, and if I have to hear Miles,
Well, when we get into DS9, you and I will have this conversation again.
Okay.
Because I'm contracted, right? Have I signed my contract at this point?
I don't remember presenting you with a contract, but hey, that's okay.
I'll make fun.
You're there. So when you go to work tomorrow, just go to the chalkboard, if you guys even use chalkboards anymore, and just scratch down.
Yeah, whiteboards.
Darn, not the same. It doesn't make the same noise.
Sorry, buddy.
That's all right. Okay, so these guys... and now that they went through her memory, they helped her remember the paintbrush and her grandma and what she used to do. Now she remembers everything about it, which is really fascinating. I would love to do something like that. Although nobody else on the ship wants to. What was that about? Before I go on to my next note, they're all like, nah, nah, nah.
I don't understand most of the people's nods, but I understand Riker's nods.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, of course.
This when Riker obvious. Says, eh, I'm not really interested.
You really?
I'm like, all right, Riker. Good job, buddy. Way to not put that projection in anybody else's mind.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Because he's just thinking about grandma. You know he's thinking, all right, which hole in her face? Sorry, never mind. Let's keep going.
Oh, no way. Even Riker wouldn't have thought that.
No, I don't. And I was talking about his tongue, not his, you know, Riker.
Were you really? Oh, so.
You're not going to cut that out. I already know you're not going to cut that out. My name is not Chris. I don't live in South Carolina. I'm some other person.
No.
You don't know me, whoever you are listening to this.
We tried to get the guy from Upper Pylon, but he was unavailable, so we had to get his twin brother.
It sounds like him, but it's not him.
Yeah, no, you're not Chris. That's why I said Mr. Johnson. You know, Mr. Stan Johnson.
No, what you talking about? There's no Johnson in this room.
What?
Let's keep going.
So, anyway. But, yeah, I mean, they're all squeamish. And like he says, I have never encountered such squeamish people before. I don't know. I think it would have been more interesting than what we got. So, anyway, especially Riker. Grandma leaves the room. Okay, so these guys, you know, they seem pretty cool, but they begin to probe Beverly's mind without permission, which is a no-no. You can't do that.
So did they really probe her mind? I mean, they suggested that she had forgotten her first kiss or something, right?
Yes.
I don't believe that. I'm certain that Beverly remembers exactly where she was.
Yeah, no, she's thinking about that first kiss. So she probably is, you know, remembering whoever he was.
Tried to remember his phone number so she can go back now as a widowed single mum.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe. You know.
Hey, Jeremiah. Do you remember that kiss we had that day underneath the bleachers? Well,
remember that kiss we had? Well, here's Wesley.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm curious. I'm gonna wait till Chris is back. Hey, look, there's Chris's number one fan. You don't get it, do you?
I do get it. I'm a bit confused as to why people disappear to get an ice cube. I assume that's a euphemism of some description.
Well, he's got things in that ice cube, I'm sure. Or, you know, that ice cube is in something else. But, no, Chris, you're back. But we were discussing, we saw your number one fan there.
Who's that?
Look behind you. You don't see your number one fan?
My treadmill, so I can lose some weight?
No.
up on the ceiling.
Behind you.
The fan?
Yeah, your number one fan.
It's like 150 degrees in South Carolina right now.
Oh, wow.
Also, the eclipse coming right through South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So there are like 150 million more people in South Carolina right now than there should be. Oh, so it's extremely hot.
Makes it even hotter. Well, we were talking about the Yulian, the older Yulian, the grandpa Yulian, was discussing Beverly's first kiss. And they said, oh, you know, Father, you know you can't do that. Stop that. That's a no-no. But I'm curious. Do you think Beverly could feel somebody touching her sacred spot? And no, I mean the one in her brain, by the way. Do you think she could feel somebody? Or do you think they can actually tap your thoughts? Or just... Basically, what he's doing is just... He's another telepath, right? He's another Luoxana.
I don't know. You know, they put those little electrodes on your head to see how your brain is working, or map your brain and see what parts of your brain are working when you're doing certain things. I'm sure you don't feel those. So, I mean, aside from the sticker on your head. So if there was some person who could somehow do that without... but however, it does... So this further explains their power. So they can put you into that place, which I thought at first that that was the only way they could read your mind. But apparently they can also read your mind without you having to relive it.
Right.
And so that just further explains what their abilities are, which is fine to me.
That's what I thought too, because they keep coming up with this incident with Deanna and Riker. Unless she was thinking about it at that moment, he seems to have picked something out of her brain, out of the catalog in her brain, and said, let's discuss that. And then made her relive that, whether she wanted to or not. So I'm asking is, couldn't the person know? Couldn't they feel like some kind of pain on their brain that it's being tapped into at this moment?
I mean, kind of, as humans, right, the reason why we have pain receptors anywhere, or the reason why we kind of are aware of things from a sensory perspective, is that these things are usually, you know, excited, and then we do something about it. We don't need to have pain receptors in the middle of our brain, because we're very rarely going to be stabbed into the middle of our brain. So when people do get, like, you know, severe head injuries, it's they don't actually feel things. So as a result, just evolutionarily speaking, due to the lack of threat, I doubt we would be aware if someone were to try to attack us with mind bullets or whatever they happen to have.
Man, imagine if somebody had that kind of power and they could figure out your social security number, your date of birth, your PIN number on your bank card, what they could do with it. But okay, that'd be one hard thing to police. So
there's no money in this system, though, probably because they met some space aliens like this. And they were like, there's no point in having money anymore.
No, I mean, if somebody could do that in our time, or somebody could just read your thoughts or read your brain, not even your thoughts, because you're not even thinking about it, but they have your brain cataloged where they could just pick something out of your past and make you relive that. What I'm getting at is, how could they police such a thing? Unless another other
genocide.
Unless another Yulian has to know that it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be tough. I imagine the Beta Zeds, though, could probably tell. Nope. If they hadn't made that trope that the Beta Zeds couldn't tell for some inane, unknown reason.
Yeah. Right.
Although, to be perfectly fair, right, it's probably true that Beta Zeds probably can't read everyone's mind, because why would they have the ability to read people's minds if, you know, they've evolved in isolation several hundred million light years away from each other? There's no real reason. You know, you don't have compatibility between Windows and Mac. What makes you think you have compatibility between Beta Z brainwaves and the Yulians? So it's only really the fact that Star Trek takes as a starting position that all aliens are kind of compatible from a brain scan perspective, from a you know, baby making perspective, from all perspectives, that makes us think that that's always a bit of a cop out. But it's pretty closer to the truth if we did find aliens out there.
I think, though, we find it as a cop out because of your initial logic, right? So the initial logic is that Star Trek feels like, and obviously they show this with the fact that different aliens can mate and make babies and various other things, and the Beta Zed can link with anybody when it's convenient, but every time you want it to not happen, you just write it in. So it's the flip-flopping and the waffling. If you decide that she's not compatible with anybody other than humans, I'm good with that from the beginning. If you decide that she's compatible with half the aliens, then you get into a weird situation where it's waffling, and we're like, okay, as a viewer, I can never tell week to week why she's any good. Why would we even have her on the ship?
Yeah, right. That's true.
No, and in a way, you don't... something that I think I said right at the beginning when people did ask me about, you know, why do you like Star Trek and do you sometimes get frustrated that the science is wrong or anything like that? I always feel like you, it's okay for you to invent a world with internally consistent rules, even if those rules bend certain things in certain directions. So, you know, I like the idea that, you know, you can't really have the stories unless you assume that most of the aliens can interact well with each other, be in the same environment with each other, not be made out of antimatter, that kind of thing. You have to have that trope in order to keep things going. And then at that point, all you're really demanding is internal logical consistency. And that's really the thing that, you know, you as long as you lay down the ground rules, then we should follow them. And that's the thing that they break.
Constantly.
And I think we would forgive this episode if it was utilized to a better degree. Like if they somehow found a way, your powers are blocked, but here's this fantastic story we're telling. Nobody would be mad about her powers being blocked. Does that make sense? Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'd be mad about it if the episode wasn't so vapid.
No, sure, and we've had instances in the past where I think we enjoyed the game, Lou. Maybe my memory's playing tricks with me, but I seem to remember enjoying the game. And one of the first things you do in the game is that you know that Data is not going to be affected, so you have to write him out somehow, or you have to neuter him. And you know, it's fine. It's fine as long as you do it, and as long as it is acknowledged that it's an inconvenience, and it just doesn't become a we've got a really poor, you know, we once again have a poor story and we can't have this happen, so we'll either write it out in a very poor way or just forget about it. I can certainly accept it for a decent story.
So the game, I gave it a 3, you gave it a 4, and Chris gave it a 5.
What, were we... Were we all on for the game?
Well, yeah, we were. I remember that, actually. That was fun. I feel like it's me and Kieran. Like, we're the big guys these days. We're on most of your episodes. You might as well just sign us to contracts for good for the rest of the seasons.
The money is pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
So just speak to Lou about that.
Yeah. I'd have to pay you double what I'm paying you now if you became me.
Yeah, I think that'd be
that's usually the way it happens. James gets twice what the guests get. Okay, so everybody out there's going, gee, I wonder what they make now. I want to get on that show.
Well, mathematically, it is correct.
Just remember, kids, absolutely. 2 times 0.
Yes, there you go. Okay, so just before the end of the teaser, we push onto one of the faces of the Yulians. It's the younger guy, Jev, I think his name is.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can kind of tell he's got something on his mind. He doesn't like his father, by the way. That's pretty obvious. But then again, do you think maybe, you know, if there's any kind of insanity plea that... Okay, so you think if there's any insanity play that it may be because his dad pushed him to this, just being a complete ass?
How was his dad an ass, would you say?
Well, I mean, he's taking little jabs at him through the entire thing, you know? I remember once Jeb was trying to get with 14, you know, old farts, and he couldn't read them. I got him within 30 minutes, boom. Well, that's nice. Make your son feel inferior.
Fair point.
No, that's not an insanity plea, right?
He drove him crazy. You know, he got sick of hearing about it.
And I mean, I think we all know, right, that the reason why Jeb wasn't able to do anything within, like, 4 days or whatever it was, because he was busy raping the woman on the corner, right?
Yes.
Isn't that really what we learn by the end of it?
Yes.
I don't know, though. I think Lou might have in the 90s, they weren't making comments about millennials yet. But one of the big arguments about millennials, which I am 31, so I fall right in like the back end range of that. But I was poor, so I'm not really a millennial. Anyway.
Hang on. I have to say, I get really upset about the term millennial.
I think it's
it's something that I get very frustrated about, and here's why. I was born between generations, and I have no idea what I'm expected to be.
Right.
Because I neither fit one nor the other.
I think all people are going to be gradations of these things, right, Lou? So I'm not saying that, like, everybody in a specific generation is going to be this, but the big argument against millennials is that they have never had to face real challenge. They've never been truly challenged, which my argument would be the baby boomers also have never been truly like, they've only been truly challenged by the fact that, you know, they were, none of them were, anyway, we won't go into all that depth. I don't want to get into all that, but my point here is that a lot of the argument,
a podcast special on this at some
we
point.
Could I think we
it'll
could
be good. It'll be good.
It would be long, and there's a lot of stuff because there's nuances and gradations, but a lot of the argument against millennials is they've never faced challenge. So this kid is essentially a millennial of his group. Like, at the end, that's what I feel. When I was listening to this, I was like, oh, in the 90s, they didn't realize this was this, but this is what they were kind of saying. This guy is a millennial. He is absolutely an unchallenged individual who has this great power, but doesn't fully understand the responsibility of it. And that was kind of the only thing I could get from this whole episode, was that here's this guy who has this fantastic, amazing, awesome power, doesn't fully understand how to appropriately use it, and has been kind of picked on by his dad. And here we go. So we look at the kids today and we say, why are you upset about this little thing? You know, we look at these kids my age, 25, 26. Why are you so affected by this very little thing, minuscule thing on the comparative chart of things that people have had to deal with? You've lived your entire life not only with air conditioning, but with internet and cell phones. So why are you so upset about not being able, you know, like having to use a specific restroom? Why does that bother you so much? You know, like, a lot of people look at that and they're like, I don't get it. I don't get why you're like, that's not really a thing that is harming you. Here's this guy who's never had to deal with anything, but he's going out amongst these people and he's stretching his legs with his abilities, his amazing, fantastic abilities, but he doesn't fully understand what he's got or where he came from, I don't think. And Dad kind of alludes to that at the end, which I guess is a consistent problem as technology increases. People don't understand what good they have and how they misuse it. It's a part of immaturity. So I don't think it's a great reason for this episode to be made, but I think that that's kind of the point that they come to, is that here's this guy who has these powers, but he doesn't understand how to use them, and he's got like these tendencies that tend towards evil, because everyone tends towards evil because the sin of Adam. F religion, right? But there we are. That's what I think this episode's all about.
Okay, so Geordi doesn't remember how he spent his last birthday. I was thinking, I think I know how he spent his last birthday.
I'm pretty sure he was in the holodeck too.
With Leah Brahms?
Either Leah Brahms, or he has a recreation of Ryza with a Horgon in each hand, blowing out his birthday candle. Two Horgons. He's double-fisted Horgons.
Lots of Jamaharon on that holodeck.
Lots of Jamaharon. Yes, so I think he remembers that. He just doesn't want Data to know about it. So anyway. Alright, and I already said that I would love for them to probe my memories. Maybe they can help me find my two hard drives that I cannot find anywhere around here.
But so I don't think it's that unusual, right, that people didn't want them to probe their memories. I find it odd that... I mean, they do make a point of it all. You know, people are seem to be reserved. And maybe, by the way, maybe it's just because I'm a reserved Englishman that I'm going to be saying this. But I can't imagine many people volunteering for this kind of thing. You know, please come in here. Let me read your mind, and I'll help you find where you put, you know, your shoes. It's okay. We're good.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well. Yeah. I think people who would not want that have something to hide. To be honest, that's what I think. Nope, they don't want something to come out. Something would come out. They would be able to read something that I don't want them to read. That's why I think they're so squeamish. If they could control what it is that the guy is pulling up, that's one thing. But it's like you go into my computer and figuring out every password to every file that I have password protected and open it up to see what's in there. I would only want you to see what I would want you to see. And as long as he can read everything, that's why I think they'd be squeamish.
That folder titled Jenna Jameson, Lou does not want you cracking that password.
Mm-mm. No. Okay. Let's see. So, so the younger Yulian, Jeb, gets to, you know, he sees an opportunity to get his freak on with Deanna. And this is where the show, of course, starts to take a really strange turn. Because she's starting to have thoughts of Riker. Now, this is where it's interesting, because what's happening to her is, you know, no, we shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be doing this. All of a sudden, he's got her on the ground. To me, that feels rapish.
Yeah, it's certainly rapish. But to me, I didn't think this was a proper memory.
No, some of it was. I think some of it was where they were, you know, I don't remember. Obviously, we never saw that. Just like we never saw Riker, you know, letting the crewman die after bringing the isolation door down. We don't know if that's real. We don't know if any of it's real. But can he create instead of read? I thought they could only read.
Well, so if you go to Jack Crusher one, right, there's clearly stuff going on there that one has to assume isn't what happened.
Picard's thing on his face? What's that about?
So I kind of felt that he certainly had the power to kind of, you know, manipulate, but almost, I mean, it's probably not true, but sometimes you get, I've heard that if, whilst someone's asleep and dreaming, if you talk to them, you can kind of guide their dreams. Don't know how true that is, but I kind of felt that that's the power, the control that he had. He was able to kind of push them in a certain direction from a mind control perspective. So, you know, obviously a lot of the vision is being built by the individual in question, but he can make suggestions and the like.
So if I was dreaming and my wife hears me say no, my wife will find out. She could say, "It's okay. She'll never know." Yes, yeah, mm-hmm. She will. No, she won't. Okay, I don't know. I've never heard that before. That suck. So Riker turns into the young to Jeff, basically, and now she's in a coma. They really don't explain why, even though it's more like what's that syndrome? Uridian syndrome, Uridarian syndrome, something syndrome.
Yeah, there's a something syndrome on there.
It's kind of like that, but it isn't really that. They never explain, even after they find out what's going on and how he's been doing it. Why did we end up in comas? It's almost like he needed them to be out so he can erase what it is he's put into their brain.
It's a bit of a, it's clearly, it's not the perfect crime, right? So he's got a person that can kind of go into your memories, have a bit of a look around and leave you without any recollection of it, but it leaves you in a coma for 72 hours. I don't know why this is happening in a way. So you might want to just structure the episode for there to be a bit of ambiguity over why they fell into the coma, whether or not it's contagious. And they do have this bit of a hoo-ha around, or is it a biological agent that was brought on board with the aliens that caused it? But kind of, we know straight away that that's not the case. We've been shown too much for us to feel that there's any ambiguity here. And And in a way, right, would the episode change in any way if they didn't go into comas but just woke up not remembering? Or would it really change if they died and kind of exploded? It doesn't feel like it would in a way. So I don't really know what
I have a theory. Is. Go I have on. A theory. While they're in a coma, we don't get any more information. But did you think as soon as they wake up, she's going to be able to say, it was Jeff, he did this. He did this whole thing. It was him. Only to find out that I don't remember anything. Do you think that might be why?
Misdirection? Okay, so that's something that they could have, right? They could have like this suspense. But in a way, there's no story in the episode that's trying to get them to be revived, right? There are no scenes with Crusher getting closer to finding a solution. There's no kind of ticking clock that, we have to find an antidote to this in 12 hours, otherwise she's going to be brain damaged. In a way, we're not even led to believe that Troy is going to wake up. You're almost right. I thought that you actually had written off Troy for the episode. You certainly write off Riker and Crusher for the episode. So in a way, it's like Troy's now awake. Oh, well, maybe didn't see that come in, wasn't expecting it. Maybe they can have a chat. And it's like, don't remember anything, Picard. Okay, well, I suppose a chat didn't help.
Yeah.
That's really about it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but while she was in a coma, Riker goes to Jev and says, you know, we'd like to examine you guys because, well, you know, it's pretty obvious that you came on board and now this is happening. And I think that pretty much pisses a guy off, and which makes him assault Riker. So, obviously, this is not an episode, this is not an incident we see, is it? I don't remember anything like that.
No, and I kind of feel that if this is like a true event that occurred, I would like to believe that Riker is stronger than what he's kind of shown in this episode, in this scene. So I don't think Riker should be concerned about having to make that call. And even if an ensign gets up into his face and says, you know, you cured her, he shouldn't, you know, he has to be stronger than that. He has to be a local general, and he has to be able to say, look, I have 1,000 people on one side that are going to be in danger if we don't make this call, and that's the way it happens.
Chris, you're too silent.
I'm still here. I feel like I've kind of blown my load on this episode. I don't know what else to say.
Okay, wasn't Picard good looking in a wig?
Fantastic looking. I don't know what that little metal thing was on his head, though. Can anybody explain that to me?
Was he in the incident that got Crusher killed?
Yeah, I think so.
So that could be just some funky bandage.
Yeah, I always read it as not a bandage, but like a post-surgery kind of thing. I actually remember this episode for this particular scene, so let me kind of put a bit of praise on the episode. And it will give this episode a plus one. the actual scene in as they go and sort out Jack Crusher, that's pretty spooky and pretty nicely filmed, and they've got a young Beverly and they have a young Picard, and I remember that scene vividly. And it is something that you watch this episode and you think, actually, that's, you know, had that been in a better story, that's a pretty good scene.
All the scenes that had that. I'm sorry, go on.
Mechanically, so yeah, I'll agree. I think mechanically, the scenes when you're invading someone's mind, I think mechanically they're very well done.
Yeah. I thought even the audio was really good on them. Some kind of like oscillating. It's almost like they were all talking into a fan as they were talking. Okay. So Dr. LaForge scours the computer to try and determine what's causing these problems or what's causing them. But as you can imagine, he's getting nowhere. And I even thought he was being a complete jerk with the computer, too. You know, the computer can't give that, well, yeah, imagine that. Yeah, it's kind of what I figured, computer.
Yeah, but I think, by the way, I think that his kind of search is, it's natural and it's a good thing to do. However, in this episode, I felt it was padding. Maybe because just tonally, I think it maybe dragged the story along. And at this point, I'm not thinking, ooh, the story is about to be solved. The mystery is about to be cracked. I'm so tense waiting for the answer. I'm kind of sitting here thinking, oh, come on already.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
So in other circumstances, this would have been fine. This would have been nice, and him thinking ahead, saying, oh, well, maybe the chemicals decompose into something else. I'll be scanning for them. Yeah, it's fine. But unfortunately, it's not holding my interest.
So Dr. Crusher, you know, the real doctor on the ship, is also in our office trying to figure out what's going on when she begins to have these flashbacks of Picard taking her to her dead husband. And like you said, those are pretty damn good visuals. You don't have to do this. You know, I need to see. Well, you don't have to do this, but I need to see. Those are pretty awesome. And then all of a sudden it switches to Jev, and then boom, she's down too. So do you think we only see three people that go down?
Mm-hmm.
Troy, Wrecker, and then Crusher. But do you think there could have been a whole bunch of people down in their own quarters that nobody misses?
they were just like not on shift that day, so they were just forgotten about or something.
Yeah, just sitting there sleeping in their bed and nobody bothers with them.
Little
people.
Yeah, I'd hope not, right? I'd hope that, like, you know, the lower decks version of this episode is that, you know, tens of people have knocked out and just no one cares. That would be rather unfortunate.
Well, no one cares, but I think it would have been a better episode if that had actually happened. We started out with a ship-wide emergency. People are going into comas for no reason, but we only get the two or three.
But didn't we have that in another episode? I thought we had, I don't know if it's comas or, but I mean, actually, the thing that comes flying into my view at the moment is schisms with not people being in comas, but people being tired. But I thought there was another one with comas. Maybe not in this episode. Ah, no, I'm thinking about the Voyager episode where people start disappearing. That's the one I'm thinking of.
They copied this one.
What's that?
They copied this one. This is Voyager.
They do copy a lot.
Also, Brandon Braga, who secretly ghostwrote this episode in my brain.
Yeah, right.
At least it's no, Brandon Braga at this stage is putting out good stuff.
Right.
Now, am I the only person that thought it was weird that Data and Geordi rush into Beverly's office, see her knocked out in the coma, and then Data puts on the comm badge, or taps the comm badge and says, the emergency medical team to the Crusher's office. And you think, hang on, aren't you in sick bay? Don't you just turn around and go, wait, doctor, over here.
Yeah. Come here. I mean, hey, emergency medical, right here.
Yeah.
I don't need a comm. Right.
Because you're given the impression that sick bay isn't staffed when Crusher's at home or on lunch break or on the toilet or something. But surely it must be.
Good point. If you've got to wait for somebody in an emergency, you know, yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so Dr. LaForge did find out, however, that wherever the Yulians go, these people get uracine syndrome, or they go into these unexplained comas for some reason. But it isn't until later when they discover which one of this group is actually there for the whole time, for every one of those unexplained comas. Just Jeff.
Yeah, there are some lines in here saying, you know, they look for unexplained comas, and then they said, oh, there are no unexplained comas. And he goes, And then they went, oh, actually, well, maybe not every doctor is as diligent as Dr. Crusher.
Yeah.
And misdiagnosed it. And I was thinking, no, maybe not every doctor is as incompetent as Dr. Crusher and actually diagnosed it correctly. Mm-hmm. And maybe this missed undiagnosed coma is really just Crusher not really getting her measurements right.
Right. But I do find it interesting that, you know, the guy tries to divert the whole thing off of him by volunteering to help her recover her thoughts of that attack. And it turns, and this is great, because he basically, well, call it for what he said. He basically raped her again right in front of everybody and places false memories into her brain that it was his dad that actually did it.
Actually,
he didn't blame it on the mother.
Okay, so actually, a couple of things here. I have a problem with the mum. I don't like the makeup. It's clearly like a 40-year-old woman that's been made up to be 172, which why is it necessary? I mean, if you want an old woman, hire an old woman. If you don't particularly mind whether it's old or middle-aged, it's fine, right? Just have a middle-aged woman. And then, was this supposed to be his wife or his mum or his grandma or what? I didn't really, it was not integral to the plot, so it doesn't matter.
Doesn't care.
Is it appropriate for this to be happening whilst, like, your superior officer's kind of standing over you? It's like, you know, let's say, Lou, that you had a particularly bad episode at work where you had some, you know, let's say someone came over to you, you got attacked, and then you needed some type of therapy to get over it, to get over the stress, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. And then someone said, actually, you might be able to identify the number plate of the car that drove away, and you're the only one that could do it. Can you imagine actually going to the therapy session and your boss being behind you?
Really?
And there at the time? I mean, how inappropriate is this? This is a... It's silly. Yeah. It's all silly.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense. Just, it was the whole thing is just to point the finger at the wrong person. That's all.
And I also got frustrated by... There's a lot of talk around this point about, what if you're going to accuse us, at least allow us to prove ourselves innocent. Isn't that fair? And it's like, no, you're not being accused of anything. We're taking precautions based on, you know, probabilities. We're not being accused of anything. So they try to throw it back at them, saying, oh, surely we have the right to prove ourselves innocent. And they went, I would have just gone, no, you don't. You don't have the right to prove yourself innocent, right? If you, you know, in certain circumstances, if you're a guest on a ship and then they have to take certain precautions because something has happened, you don't have the right to pronounce yourself innocent and be an inconvenience for the purpose of plot. So I kind of got a bit frustrated as they were attempting to kind of throw those kind of vague logical arguments around.
Completely fair, I would argue. I think this whole thing is just story servicing story. And at this point, I've kind of tuned out personally. I tried to watch this episode like 3 times this week. And every time I tuned out here in the middle towards the end. Mm-hmm. You tune back in for Picard's speech at the end, but like, it's so hard to stay tuned in for this middle portion where it's just like, ugh.
Right.
Yeah.
But he wants to put them in their quarters. I mean, I assume that's where the guy was when it happened, so what's the point? How far away can it be done? Could he do it from the... If they were orbiting his planet, could he do it? Or does it have to be on the same ship, the same deck? I'd like to have known all that, too. So the punishment for memory invasion is quite severe. I wonder what that is.
Yeah, I think they explicitly don't mention it, because I didn't remember what the punishment was, but the way he delivers the line, he goes, the punishment for memory invasion is... And I was thinking, he's now going to say, death! Or do something like that, and he went quite severe. It's nearly as bad as a line that he could have delivered. No, I mean, I've not got a huge amount of enthusiasm anymore, I'm afraid.
Yeah, right. Okay, but like we said, Geordi and Data find out that in some of the planets where unexplained comas occurred, Tarmin was on his home planet. So unless he could do it by subspace, there was only one person that was there during the whole time, Jev. So, but while they're figuring that out, he's going by to visit Deanna, you know, to apologize for what his daddy has done and to try one more time at getting into her mental panties.
Her cat suit?
Yeah, in her cat suit. Oh, we forgot to discuss a very important thing, and that was Deanna's nightie.
I don't know that that's important. I don't know that we need to discuss it.
Okay. She does have better nighties in later episodes, I'll say that.
Look, we all know that Troy is fantastically beautiful. But I just want to point out that this is an episode where it's supposed to feature her heavily. She's supposed to be the main person. Until the last fight scene, she's inefficient. She's ineffectual. That makes her a damsel in distress. Now, I love that she got a fight in, that she smacked this dude in the head with a computer. I love it. I think it's fantastic. Too little, too late. She should have been an empowered character this entire time. These things, I don't know. Maybe it's the 90s sensibilities versus my 2017 sensibilities, but I just feel like this was a complete misstep. And they would not make the same mistake if they were writing this episode today as they made here. This would be a completely better episode if she was a strong, empowered character. And she's just not. And they do it in service of this rape storyline that makes no sense with their point that they're trying to make over the whole episode. It's just a complete misstep. And you got to wonder, Jerry Taylor is the writer on this episode. And on Continuing Missions, another podcast that Chris Johnson is on. I'm not Chris Johnson. We've already established that. But Chris Johnson is on. occasionally. I'm on there sometimes when the bad, salacious things happen. but on Continuing Missions, we talk about Jerry Taylor and her two books in our early episodes, and they're weird, and she's got a lot of weird ideas. And one of the big things that we kind of joke about on all the podcasts that I've been on is that Jerry Taylor thinks that men want a certain thing, that they want phaser battles, that they want starship battles, and that they want sex. And so I feel like she twisted this episode to have some sexual element when it didn't need it, when it didn't service the actual story. It didn't service the philosophy or the point that you were trying to create. And this is a situation where I got to say, a lot of people don't love Gene. I know, like, Matt Hansen and some other people that I know, they don't love Gene Roddenberry's vision, and they don't think that his philosophy and all that are as effectual in later episodes. But this is a situation where I think that his particular philosophy, if he were sitting down with this episode and, like, hashing it out with somebody, would maybe play through, and he would say, I don't think this is servicing the point that you're trying to make. Let's change this piece. Let's change the fact that Deanna is just a damsel in distress, even with his ancient sensibilities. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't a paragon of femininity or feminine power. But, and I don't think that, anyway, I think that this could have been a spectacular story, that there are little bits and pieces that glimmer with goodness to me. But they just missed the point by not committing to one or the other and going with what they think is going to make a fun episode, quote unquote. I'm real bad at this episode, if you can't tell. Should have never asked me to be on this.
Well, we needed somebody. We don't want to go without knowing, so we had to get you. And besides, who's best?
Cena's the best.
She wasn't available.
She's incommunicado. Okay. And we love her. We miss you, Cena. Oh. You're much loved. I hope that you're well.
Yes. We'll get her back on again, I would assume. So, but, you know, that happens. People have things come up and they're just not available. So, but I'm glad you were. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode. So, unless there's something I missed, should we go into our ratings?
Yes.
It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on a scale of 1 to 5. Even though Dedamore did screw us on our ratings last time. You haven't heard it yet. I don't think it's gone out yet, but 2 weeks ago, or 2 episodes ago, Brian gave his episode a 0.5, and he would not back down. Even when I said, but Brian, this is on a scale of 1 to 5. 0.5. I'm like, Brian.
I'm like, I guess. It's so bad that it doesn't even go on the scale. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we started with 1 to 5, and come on, I can't think of any Star Trek. Just the fact that it's Star Trek, it deserves a 1.
I mean, whatever. Dedamore disagreed with you, and he made his stand.
Yeah, oh, he would
not. As a Klingon will.
As a Klingon will. So, on this one, Chris, I'm going to go first, because I'm curious. I want to see where yours compare to mine after I give it. I'm really not interested in this episode too much. It's a pretty bland episode. Some of the flashback scenes were filmed very good with some very interesting audio selection for the voices. I like that. But the Yulians are really lame. The lady, I mean, she wasn't even needed at all except for just to be nice. While the father was a jerk and the son was an assaulter. I don't know what you call a person who assaults somebody except an assaulter. So this episode did have potential. It would have had been great had it been more of the mystery like Chris says. But it didn't. It's not very interesting, I'm sorry to say. So I don't know. I was going to give it a 1, but I think Deanna's 90 gives it an extra half point. So I'm going to give this a 1.5. Chris, how about you?
That's not a bad reason to give it an extra half point.
Deanna is, I mean, I think that it is. You know, Doc, we would argue that it's objectification to some extent. So yes, I would say that on that, maybe it's not a good enough reason. But beauty can sometimes bring something up. And so he mentioned the shots. He mentioned Deanna's 90. I'm going to take those two, put them together, and say that Lou really means it's a 1.5 because some of the shots are very beautiful and interesting. And also Deanna is beautiful and interesting. And so it's a 1.5. So we're just going to mold what Lou said into what he probably meant, because it did kind of sound like objectification was the reason for your 0.5, when really I think it's just like there are some beautiful elements, so it's not quite a 1. All right.
Yes, that must be it, Chris. That's got to be it. Well, I mean, you don't like the fact that he did it to her, but you can understand why, because she's so pretty. That really is a scary really thought. Why,
because no matter how pretty something is, you can never take it for your own unless it agrees to be with you.
That's a bad thought. Yes, but still.
Yes. So this episode is the tale of two episodes to me. There are two really good episodes that could have come out of the initial premise of this episode. The one episode where we actually delve into the idea of rape and we truly discover something about it, something innate in human nature or something insipid about human nature. I feel like this could have been that episode if they chose to really carry that out and bear it out and be that episode. It didn't early on. So it's not that episode. It's also not a really good whodunit, because at the end they try to make it a rape episode when really, for the most part, aside from Deanna Troi, which they just over-sexualize and focus way too much on her sexualization, it's not a rape episode. They don't develop it. They don't deal with it. They don't appropriately position it in this episode to be that. So it could have been a great whodunit. It could have been a great exploration of rape and what creates rape culture in a society and It's not either of those things, and so I'm left with this gross feeling at the end of this episode. And Matt Smosky has fully pulled me over to the dark side of the fact that the only reason to give a Star Trek episode anything lower than a 2 is if it feels gross to you. I think this might be a first on this show. I believe that I've gone all 4s and 5s so far, so I'm going to really drag down our ratings here. But this episode is gross. I almost don't ever want to watch it again. I love Deanna Troi as a character. I love Marina Sirtis as an actress. I think that she is an incredible personality in both realms. And I loathe to see her character done this way. Not fully committed to, not fully explored. But I guess that's what you get when you're week-to-week writing. It's hard to really fully develop something when you're writing from week-to-week. So, I give them some credit there, but this is a one-star episode. This is the worst of the worst Star Trek. Violations fits in there right along with Code of Honor and some of those other really just terrible Star Trek episodes, Melora and some of the others. So this is a one for me, and I know it's rare, but... I do not like this. I think it's gross, and I don't like it.
Yeah, it's very rare. I've been trying to look, and I don't see you giving anything under a 4. Fascinating. So, okay, so it will be a 1. James, how about you?
Okay, so
he's going to bring it up to a 2, I'm sure. Sorry, go on.
So this episode's worse than Code of Honor. This Code of Honor had... But I think there's something there that they were trying to do that they kind of spectacularly failed on and delivered something, and then they went, hey, what about this? And people went, you what? And he's like, no? No, not at all. I have no idea what they're delivering here. This is certainly much, much, much worse than Melora. Nothing wrong with Melora, by the way.
Yeah, you like that episode. When we get there in our upper pylon 4... discussion. There is no upper pylon 4, by the way. We'll discuss
lower pylon 3.
Lower pylon 3.
There are bits and pieces that you can have an argument and a discussion about that are brought up in Melora, probably similar to the episode that we're going to be doing next week. I don't see much to redeem this episode really at all. Okay, yes, isn't Troi lovely? Give it a plus one, and aren't the scenes nice? Give that a plus one and stuff. You're still only at 1 in my mind, even if you were to do that. I'm certainly coming in kind of 1 out of 5. This is not a good Star Trek episode. And actually, the thing that I kind of stumbled on is that really what benefit do we get from the storytelling perspective to have this set in the Star Trek universe? I see nothing. I see nothing at all. And I think that, you go out of your way to harm some of your characters. It's a wasted opportunity. And it's also boring. So, even when you sometimes do these tangential episodes that have nothing to do with anything else, they can be at least fun, or at least a palate cleanser. No one's feeling... cleansed after watching this episode. So please revisit some of the rants that I've had earlier on the episode if you need more, but I can't give it more than 1 out of 5.
Okay, 1 out of 5. Wow, let's see here, that's 2 ones in a row, Doc.
It's getting worrying.
What was the last episode?
Hero Worship.
I don't know if I remember that one. I can't wait to listen to it.
The little boy. The Hero Worship was better than this, I think.
We were attacked!
Yeah.
This is the alien that presents itself as a little boy to Riker?
No, that's imaginary.
No.
But that's Future Imperfect.
Okay.
Future Imperfect.
Because I love that.
So this is the one they find...
Which one do you mean by... alien that presents himself to Riker? You mean the one where he's like in the future and it's his son?
Yeah, Future Imperfect. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. That's what I'm thinking.
Except there's also imaginary friend, which is the hey, let's go to the Arboretum and let those two little girls together.
Oh,
isn't one of them famous? I was only impressed that one of them was famous or became famous.
Hmm.
Oh, they weren't then. I'm sure they are now, but no, I don't know. I don't remember that. Okay, so, yeah. Okay. All right, then. Well, Chris, and by the way, no, we were lower pylon 2. I don't know why you said 4 and I said 3, and then we'll get to 2. No, we're lower pylon 2. You know, we can't be as good as upper pylon.
No, I know that you're lower pylon 2. I always go to the number that can't be.
Number 4.
Right.
That's what makes sense. That, okay. Yeah, see, we're the waste extraction pylon. Well, you guys are up there having all the good adventures.
You're the asshole?
We could be.
After your argument for why this is a 1.5, I would agree. You're definitely.
God, thanks, Chris.
Troy's new romance faces tragedy.
I have to go.
I need you here.
When a massive threat targets a genetically perfect world.
I'm afraid we're going to have to evacuate your people.
Only one option remains.
A multi-phase tractor beam.
Sacrificing the Enterprise to save hundreds of lives.
Termination of all life support in 5 seconds.
Come on, come on.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
All right, well then, everybody, join us next time as we review episode 13, The Masterpiece Society. And unfortunately, we're not going to have a guest on for that one now.
Ah! Alarm me!
We're going to be alone for the first time in... No, we're not. Chris will be back for that one, so... Chris, thank you for coming on. We'll talk to you in about 10 minutes. And for everybody else, you'll hear him next time. We don't know when next time will be. We never know when next time will be. But it will be there eventually.
I just listened to one of your shows, like, this week or last week. And I listened to a lot of podcasts. So I think you're all right.
Yeah, we're doing the best I can, but I don't have time to listen to podcasts. I miss that job.
I got like a 45-minute trek to work every day, man. So I listen to probably two a day. Yeah.
Really? 7 minutes. It takes me 7 minutes to get to work. I jump on the interstate down the street from my house. I jump off the interstate right down the street from my work, and boom. 7 minutes. So, nope, I didn't even get time for it. All right, James, anything else you want to add?
Oh, no. Just, I'm very sorry. It's been a bit of a bad run the last couple of weeks. But there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, we'll get there. All right, guys. Well, we'll talk to you soon. So, everyone take care and good night.
Shoo.
That means goodbye, guys. Yep. What about James? You got a goodbye for him too?
Adios.
We've never really settled on how we actually sign out. So when you do a big and goodbye, it seems odd that I then go, oh yeah, and goodbye too. And then
I think you should say peace, motherfuckers. That's not gonna be in the episode, is it? Please cut that out of the episode. But I just
that was from hilarious. Chris from Upper Pylon 2.
Hilarious to hear the doc say, peace, mom. I just imagine it in his
I don't think I've ever
dulcet tones. Doc, do you not cuss? Are you you're a straight-laced man?
Yeah, straight-laced.
Okay. I'm waiting for him to say, however...
There's no however.
That's not going to happen.
However, good night.
After all this time, I haven't influenced you badly in any way yet?
No.
No, not yet.
I feel like my job is not done. All right. And good night again.